The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, plus a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shops, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. On Friday night, an horrific terrorist attack at a large concert in Moscow led to at least 133 deaths. Russian officials vowed revenge and suggested Ukrainian involvement, despite the Islamic State claiming responsibility. On Sky News this morning, Trevor Phillips asked Chancellor Jeremy Hunt whether Russia's version of the events could be believed.
How much trust do you think we should be placing in the Russian accounts of what's happened? The people they have in custody, they claim to be the perpetrators. They're talking about Ukrainian involvement. How much should we believe them?
Well, I think we have very little confidence in anything the Russian government says. We know that they are creating a smokescreen of propaganda to defend an utterly evil invasion of Ukraine. But that doesn't mean that it's not a tragedy when innocent people lose their lives, when you have horrible bombings. But I take what the Russian government says with an enormous pinch of salt, I'm afraid, after what we've seen from them over the last few years.
Speaking to Laura Koonsberg, Jeremy Hunt was unequivocal in stating that the state pension triple lock would remain in place for the whole duration of the next parliament if the Tories were to be re-elected.
On a different form of payment, though, when it comes to pensioners, what about the triple lock? Because you hinted this week that the triple lock, which guarantees pensioners' income, keeps pace with inflation. You hinted that might be reviewed, but will the triple lock be in the Tory manifesto this time around?
Well, I can confirm it will be, yes. And there's two very important things I would say about that. When we came to office in 2010, pensioners were more likely to be in poverty than other income groups. Now, because of the triple lock that we introduced, they are less likely to be in poverty. And I think that's a very important social change because, unlike adults of working age, pensioners can't work. They've retired. And so we need to respect that. But the second thing I would say is that is an expensive commitment.
It's a very expensive
and you
commitment.
Can only, and indeed, and, there, and you can only make that commitment if you're confident that you're going to deliver the economic growth that's going to pay for it. And what we saw in the budget was because we have a plan for growth, the OBR say that we will get back to 2%-ish growth over the next few years. And that means that we can start to make that very important commitment.
But I want to be completely clear on this. You've said it will be in the manifesto, the triple lock. Will it be in the Tory manifesto that it will be in place to protect pensioners' incomes for the whole duration of the next parliament if the Conservatives were to surprise the polls and actually turn things around?
Absolutely. We make that commitment. To pensioners and we think it's a very important one.
Trevor Phillips asked Labour Party Chair Annalisa Dodds if Labour might be moving away from their position of banning zero-hour contracts.
I noticed that the Shadow Chancellor did not say in her speech this week that you would ban zero-hour contracts. She seemed to be saying that there would be some conditions around zero-hour contracts, but you've come a long way from a year or so ago when the Labour position was clearly to ban zero-hour contracts, or have I got that wrong?
With a huge amount of respect, I think perhaps you have got that wrong. Labour's always been clear that with all of these measures, they need to be implemented in a way that preserves the good of what we see in the labour market. And we were always clear that there needs to be flexibility available for particular types of work. The problem at the moment, however, is that
Can I just stop you for a minute? Can I just get absolutely clear? So there's not under Labour, there will be no ban on 0 hours contracts, because I know many people who think that is what Labour said.
Well, we are going to ban them, and I can set out the detail of that, if it's of interest. We've said that there should be an assessment period to understand the pattern of people's hours and then ensure that people's contracts reflect that. Now, the reason why we've said that is because we've got huge numbers of people in our country who have repeatedly and repetitively on these 0 hours contracts when they could have a contract that actually reflected the hours that they work. If they had one that was more reflective of what they actually do in the workplace, that would provide them and their family with far more stability. And actually, this is really important for productivity in our country. And if I may, Trevor, you mentioned Rachel's speech. I read that excellent speech, the May's lecture, and she was really clear about how important that new deal with those provisions to make work pay, how important that is for boosting productivity in our country.
This week, the Parliamentary and Health Service Ombudsman's report found that the WASPI pension campaigners were entitled to compensation for the poor governmental communication, which led to many women being tens of thousands of pounds worse off than they expected to be when they retired. Koonsberg asked Hunt if he would commit to compensating those affected.
Whatever the big principled issues around tax and welfares are, whoever is in your job after the next election is going to have to deal with some very big unpaid bills, whether that's compensation for people who've been caught up in the infected blood scandal, whether that's people who were caught up in the Horizon scandal at the post office, or this week, the decision from the Parliamentary Ombudsman to say WASPI women who did nothing wrong, who didn't get the pensions that they expected, they must be compensated and the government should do that. Is it responsible, the actions of a responsible Chancellor, to leave those huge unpaid bills? Or are you going to commit today, you could tell us, actually to compensating the WASPI women?
Well, we are not pushing those very, very difficult challenges to the right at all. When it comes to infected blood, we've been absolutely clear we will pay compensation. It's a terrible, terrible scandal. It's gone on for far too long. And we're waiting for the report to be delivered on May the 20th. When it comes to the Horizon scandal, I've had a constituent of my own in Farncombe who is terribly affected by it. We absolutely will pay compensation. We're changing the law to make that possible. With the WASPI women, it is genuinely more complicated. And the reason is this, that we had the Ombudsman's report on Thursday, but we've also had a report from the High Court and the Court of Appeal in 2020 that says that the Department for Work and Pensions behaved completely within the law and didn't discriminate. So it appears to say something different. And we do need to get to the bottom of that apparent difference between the two.
People watching, they're still going to have to wait even after years.
Well, I hope not. We want to resolve it as quickly as we can. But there's no secret vault of money. The money that we would pay in compensation has to come from other taxpayers. So we do have to take time to get this fair.
And finally, a social media storm speculating about the welfare of the Princess of Wales ended on Friday when she announced that she has been diagnosed with cancer. Former Communications Secretary to Prince William, Paddy Haverson, told Koonsberg that this instance of media intrusion was the worst he'd ever seen.
How do you think they'll be coping as a family with all of this?
I think actually better than probably people realise. They're very strong, both as a couple and individually. I remember when I first met her as Kate, every now and then, when she was being hounded by the press, she'd ring me up in the middle of the night saying, Paddy, I don't want to bother you, but there's paparazzi outside or there's men in a car chasing me around London. She always had this sort of great strength, and she didn't want to make a fuss about it, but she felt she needed help. So I'm confident them as a couple and individually they'll get through this.
We heard there from Victoria that the decision to make a statement like this was made before the sort of frantic speculation on social media. Who do you, though, so I suppose, point at for creating this situation, creating all of that pressure? Do you think the mainstream media made it worse while social media was sort of doing its crazy thing?
Well, it feeds off itself. It's a sort of permanent doom loop, and it's the worst I've ever seen.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've been in the media all of my career. So I just think it's partly that what frustrates me, and I've heard the word vacuum, and I understand why people say that, but what we need to think about this is time. They're a family. They're just really a bit like you and I. Lots of families have dealt with this. And what do families need when they're facing cancer is time. Time to come to terms with it individually, as a couple, and then with their children. And that took quite a bit of time. And so in that period, they needed to be quiet. They needed to be able to process this, as the princess has said. And then it was a question, when do we tell everyone else? And I'm absolutely convinced that if we hadn't had all the madness in social media, if we hadn't had the sort of the Mother's Day photo mistake, they would have still done it like this. They would have still waited till this last Friday when the schools were breaking up to make the announcement.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Joe Bedell-Brill. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffee House Shots podcast on the iTunes store. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily evening blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/blend. Thanks for listening, and do join us again next week.